This is Anthony DeLongis, Simon Curlo, and Ottavio Consone from Highlander the Series, and you are listening to Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Welcome, Highlander fans, to an evening at Joe's on Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On the show, we cover all things Highlander, including movies, TV series, guest interviews, novels, audiobooks, games, special events, and a special evening with your Blood of Kings host, covering a very special event last year that Norm took part of that I'm going to grill you on, Mr. Norm. Welcome. How are you?
I'm good, and this is going to be such a fun show because we're doing something that's a little bit off the beaten path of our normal podcasts. It's just you and me and memories, because there's a lot of stuff that I really want to share with you today.
Yes, this is something I've been wanting to do for quite a while. First of all, my name is Kevin, and the other wonderful voice you hear is my co-host Norman here at Blood of Kings. And normally we have a structured show where we talk about something specific and we have a bunch of notes and all that kind of stuff, but this time we're going to dive deep into Norm's memory of an experience that he had last year. But before I do so, I just want to remind our listeners where you can find us. You can find us on the Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play for Android users. You can also go to FPNet at Podbean to find us, and there's also the Podbean app that you can download and find the Fandom Podcast Network. On Instagram, we are at Fandom Podcast Network and Blood of Kings Pod. Facebook, we have the Blood of Kings, a Highlander fandom group. All things Highlander going on there. We have like over 1,200 members there. It's great. It's growing every day, too. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. We also have our sister page. If you want to know more about the Highlander collectible card game, that's Blood of Kings, a Highlander CCG collectible card game page. If you'd like to contact us, please email us at bloodofkingspodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to get emails, and we will read them on a future episode. On Twitter, we're at Blood of Kings Pod. Please follow us there if you have a Twitter account. We love the interaction there. I'm Kevin. I'm on Twitter at and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. Norm, where can we find you on Twitter and Instagram?
You can find me there, as always, at Starfighter1701.
All right. And, of course, our wonderful editor, Mr. Mike, he is on Twitter at Immortal Chamoli. Now, Norm, we are around the time of our one-year anniversary. And,
yes.
You know how Facebook memories kind of come up and surprise you and remember of cool stuff that happened? Well, about a year ago, now we already talked about this, but I want to remind the listeners, we talked about this on our episode zero mission statement. You went to a special event hosted by Adrian Paul regarding his Peace Fund dinner charity. Briefly describe what that was.
So that was, again, part of his Peace Fund organization, and his mission there was to drive awareness and to get funding for a project that he was doing for the Peace Fund to bring a clean water source to a village, an impoverished village of the Peace Fund's choosing. And that was probably the start of the most magical year for a Highlander fan
yes.
that I could possibly describe. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember getting really excited about hearing about your story of that evening. And we've mentioned it before. You called me, and I think around midnight your time, 3 a.m. my time, and I was grilling you for questions. And we talked about and covered that very thoroughly on that episode zero. And it also started some relationship building, specifically not just with Adrian Paul, but also with David Abramowitz and also the lovely Elizabeth Grayson.
Yes.
Who, you know, we had fun connecting her with you at impromptu interview at the Highlander 30th anniversary convention in Lakeland. We got her on Skype and we Skyped you and surprised you, and that was a lot of fun.
That's right.
But you know, today there was a post that Anthony DeLonges did on his Facebook page, and now this was one of those interviews that we had mentioned in our 40th episode, our 1 year anniversary, that you really wanted to get. You're a big fan of him.
Yes.
And before I talk about his Facebook post, I wanted you to kind of give a little background of why talking with him and eventually meeting him was important to you.
Well, rarely in life do people have the opportunity to give thanks back to the people who have inspired them because of certain things that I have been interested in, certain hobbies and certain like movies, you know, because you and I love movies, we love TV shows, we love all things in pop culture and fandom. But Anthony DeLonges has actually inspired me to pursue something that is very dear to me now, and that is historical European martial arts sword fighting. And I don't think that I would be where I am today with that if it weren't for one of two things. One, seeing him do that to inspire me to become interested in the bladed arts. And two, doing and having this journey with you, Kevin, in meeting all of these celebrities of Highlander, people that they're very meaningful to us, and then actually being inspired to reach out to them and to actually do something about that, to actually meet them and to give back and to give thanks. And that's something that I think in fandom is really important, because we do it all differently. Sometimes we'll go to conventions and we'll meet them in the autograph line and tell them about a story that changed our lives. Sometimes we'll write them. Sometimes we'll send them something to get signed. There are so many different ways that we want to connect with them. But for me, I had to find that opportunity, not just to connect with him, but to even learn from him, to become his student.
Exactly. Now, when we interviewed him on Blood of Kings, we learned something about him, and that he and his wonderful wife, Mary, own a ranch, Rancho Indelo, where mm-hmm. he invites people in to do certain things and train yes. and horseback and sword fight and a bunch of other and bullwhip class. Something I got a taste of at the Highlander 30th anniversary convention. And so he talked about that as well as his experience on the Highlander TV shows and conventions and the other classes that he does. You got really inspired by this and you had started some communication with him. And the reason why I'm bringing all this up is because he posted something on Facebook recently. He says, another great year training this year's team with Colin Hanley's terrific Australian Stunt Academy. This is the 10th year Colin has based their Hollywood advanced training at Rancho Indelo with day trips to other stunt professionals for special equipment training. And he goes on, he talks about everything that they practice with. European and Japanese and Filipino bladed weapons. Styles mm-hmm. included saber, broadsword, rapier, staff, katana, double weapons, knives, and disarms for all of the above. Yeah. And then he goes on talking about how his wonderful wife, Mary, cooked an awesome dinner. And they had a great group picture of all these guys with Anthony DeLonges wearing his signature cowboy hat. And this is something that you got to do, check something off your bucket list. You did a little bit mm-hmm. later the year last year. You talked to Anthony, and you made a very special weekend trip up to Rancho Indelo. And what I would like to do is to start from the beginning of the conversations that you had with Anthony and how you came about making this decision to do this.
Oh, gosh. You know, this brings back probably one of the more nervous memories that I had reaching out to a celebrity in Highlander. I think I told you about
this. I knew, yeah. So, I remember this, yeah.
So as we were progressing with Blood of Kings, Kevin, you and I were very, very eager to get more celebrities from Highlander onto our show. We started with David Abramowitz, and we started with John Mosby. And then from interviewing them...
And F. Braun McGash.
They gave us... And Ephraim Akash. And this was during the fandom flashbacks. Mm-hmm. This wasn't during like Blood of Kings in earnest. These were during the fandom flashbacks and Elizabeth Grayson. And all of these relationships started to cascade into trying to get them onto future episodes. And we would like to have, obviously, all of them on. And they're obviously always invited to come on whenever they would like. But one of the interviews that I was a little nervous about trying to schedule was Anthony. And you asked me why. And I said, well, there's something that it's also an intangible kind of nervousness that I had in reaching out to Anthony DeLonges, because this is the man who helped bring Duende to the Highlander TV series. Now, he was on before in season 3's episode Blackmail as Lyman Curlow. And we've seen Anthony DeLonges before on many different properties. For me, going all the way back to Sword and the Sorcerer, to Circle of Iron, to Masters of the Universe as Blade. You know, he's been on Star Trek. He's been on Babylon 5. You know, he's on Roadhouse. I mean, you know, he's just that actor that kind of pops up every once in a while. And you're like, I know that guy. And he usually plays kind of like a heavy. So now in Highlander, he created the character of Ottavio Consone, the maestro of the Verderda Destreza, in the episode of season 5 called Duende. And this is an episode that I think really a lot of people kind of, you know, they sat up and took notice and are like, wow, that is just A-level choreography that was happening in that final fight scene between Ottavio Consone and Duncan MacLeod doing the Circle Destreza sword fight.
Classic fight scene.
It is actually, in my opinion, and I know probably people may either agree or disagree, and that's fine. It, for me, that is the quintessential sword fight of Highlander. It takes such great skill and precision and care.
I remember when we were interviewing him, asking him about that scene where Duncan gets skewered by his sword, and then how he was this part of the scene, and he says it was this part of the choreography where Duncan then pulls the sword in more to get the advantage of the small saber to get his character. So I thought that was really cool.
And that for me was kind of the, I guess it was the inspiration for me to do a little bit more about that in my own life. But, you know, going back to your original question, you know, like why was it difficult for me to get this interview, is because I was nervous. I'll be 100% and completely honest. I was nervous because I don't know if we're going to get that interview or if we're not. Sometimes you don't know how these requests are going to go. So when I contacted him, and with great encouragement by John Mosby, I got him on the phone, and he answered, and he goes, hello. And I go, hi, can I speak to Tony DeLonges, please? And I swear to God, this was his reaction. He goes, well, no, you can speak to Anthony. And I go, oh, wow, I blew that intro right there. And I felt so sheepish. I was like, wow, oh, nice job, Norm. Way to be informal. So when we got past that, I introduced myself and I told him about us on Blood of Kings. And I told him about, you know, what we do, and we would love to have him on the show. And that set up the interview for us. And that was for our Kingmaker special number 2. And that was released on October 14th. That was Kingmaker's Anthony DeLonges. And we had the most amazing time interviewing him. But during the course of that interview, he kept saying that you should come up. You should come train with me. Come up to the ranch. I'll teach you how to do these things. I'll get you hands on. And I'm like, yeah, well, maybe I might do that someday. And I was kind of hemming and hawing about it for a little bit.
Yeah, I remember that. But let's geographically, you're located a lot closer to him than I am. I'm in Georgia. You're in Southern California. And he's his ranch, Rancho Indalo, is kind of inland, a little bit north of L.A. If I remember correctly, is that right?
It's north of L.A. Yeah, yeah.
I'm guessing within like maybe an hour and a half drive from you. Am I guessing?
Well, it really depends on when you know how L.A.
Yes,
traffic is.
Yes.
And I had to go through L.A. to get to, to clear the freeway system and get to Route 14 and head up onto the ranch.
Right.
So it took me about, and I wanted to get there. So Anthony said that if you could spend the night so we could get started early in the morning, that would be better. So my weekend consisted of getting there on Friday night. I left after work.
3 hours later, I got to Rancho Indalo at night, and that's an experience all in itself.
Okay, before you do that, though, I want you to set the picture here. You eventually decided to pull the trigger on this, contact him, and do this. I want you to walk us through that. What made you finally decide to do this? When you called him, what did he say? When were you planning on going? Set us up from the beginning there.
Okay, so this actually happened after I did my very first sword experience. Okay, so we had the interview with Anthony DeLonges on October 14th, and then the sword experience happened at the last weekend, the Halloween weekend of 2016, at the Stan Lee comic, well, I still call it Kamikaze, but they call it the official Stan Lee Los Angeles Comic Convention, right?
Right.
And after that, I had such a good time doing that. And I said, you know what? I am in this learning mode. I am just starting to get comfortable with my historical European martial arts club here in Southern California called South Coast Swords. I'm getting comfortable with using the saber, using the rapier, using the long sword. And now I just want to go that next step further. And then I started talking to Carol about it. You know, Carol is my significant other. You know, she's kind of like my conscience and my guiding North Star. And she basically said, well, why don't you go up there? And I said, well, I don't know. And I know that I'm going to take a deep breath here because it's hard for me to talk about this in person sometimes. But I've told you this before, Kevin. This June 4th will be the 7th year that my dad has been gone. My dad died June 4th, 2010, from a 2-year battle with leukemia. And one of the things that he and I discussed, our last conversation together, was he said that if there are opportunities for you to do something that makes you happy in life, you take that, right? And I've said that many, many times on our shows. If there's an opportunity for you to do something about your life that makes you happy and satisfied and something that you want to do, you take it. Because something that connects with me and Highlander so deeply and profoundly is that our lives are very fragile and they're very precious, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And if you're not going to take that chance and something happens to you in life that you regret not taking that chance, then we've missed the whole purpose of this, right?
Right.
So I know that sounds kind of tropish, but it's true. And every once in a while I get that, you know, I get my dad's voice in my head. He's like, you know, why aren't you going to do this? You know, because, right, you know, if you don't take this chance, not just this chance, but if you don't take a chance of something that you love to do, then you're not living your life to the fullest. And I think in Highlander, that's the whole meaning of it. You have to live life the way that you want to live it. So I was like, you know what? I'm not going to let anything hold me back. I'm going to go for it. I'm going to get over my nerves. I'm going to get over whatever hangups I have for not doing this. And I'm going to do it. So I gave him a call and I said, you know, Anthony, I'd love to come train with you. I would love to reserve a weekend to come train with you. And he goes, okay, when would you like to come? And I said, okay, you know, how about the next couple weeks? Are you free in the next couple weeks? And he said, yeah, sure. You know, I think he was actually finishing up with another student, and he said that he was going for, I think it was, he was doing an audition or some type of casting call. So it would have to be in like the next 3 weeks after the sword experience. And that's what happened. I think it was before Thanksgiving I went. Yeah.
Okay. So you guys set a date to do this. Mm-hmm. And tell us, did he tell you anything to do before you came up, or did you just make the plans on when to come up, and then what happened when you did?
He actually was very specific about how you were supposed to get there, because Rancho Indalo, it's a ranch. I mean, it's a working horse ranch with large amount of property. And it is deep, deep, deep inside Canyon Country. I need to read the blurb on his website, the opening page, because I need to kind of set people in the right mentality of what this ranch is about. So if you go to DeLonges.com and you hit his main site, it says Rancho Indalo. the paragraph there says, "The West is alive at Rancho Indelo. Rancho Indelo celebrates the spirit and skills of the American West. We offer trail riding here in the high desert to challenge you within your level of experience. With hilly trails from mild to extreme, our horses are experienced, trail savvy, strong, and willing to please. And we offer a variety of tack for your riding comfort, English, Australian, or Western. But the adventure doesn't end there. In addition to equestrian adventure, we offer training with period and modern weapons. Spend your free time learning how to crack a bullwhip on the ground or on horseback." And then it goes more into Anthony's credentials. Inducted into the Black Belt Hall of Fame as Weapons Instructor of the Year, Anthony is an experienced whip performer and trainer. His students include Harrison Ford, Michelle Pfeiffer, Angelica Houston, and Ellen Barkin. His work has been featured in the movies Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, Batman Returns, Wild Bill, Bad Girls, and on television, for us, you know, obviously Highlander and Queen of Swords. And here's the thing that really sold me. Have an interest in bladed weaponry? We offer training in swordplay, both theatrical and combative applications, knife throwing and axe throwing, broadsword, rapier, small sword, cavalry saber, lances, and more. Anthony has over 30 years of experience in the art of science and swordplay as a competitor, performer, and instructor. So that's just the tip of the iceberg of what he can do there. But obviously, I was interested in the bladed swordplay, obviously.
Of course. Now, you is this something that you communicated with him prior to you leaving?
Yes, I was very specific about what I wanted to do there because, again,
so he can prep for you and make sure that he has what you need to do that.
Exactly. Okay. Because you can go so many different directions. And I'm not a horse rider. I don't have any experience in that. So that's something that we wouldn't prep for,
right,
or prep his horses for. So I wanted, at the time, around that time in late October, early November, I was really into saber, Polish saber specifically. And he asked in the email and in our conversations, what do you want to learn? What do you want to train with? What specifically are you looking for? And I said, I would like to train in saber and in rapier.
Nice.
Because saber is one of his specialties, and rapier is the weapon that he created that, like I said, the famous sword fight from Duende, that was rapier and dagger. So I wanted to do that with him. I said, you know what? If I come away with anything from this weekend, I will have dueled rapiers with Anthony DeLongis, i.e. Ottavio Canzoni, and that's a dream come true.
Did he have the similar weapon in the movie Fearless with Jet Li?
What did he use in Fearless? I don't remember.
I was just curious. I can't remember. Okay, so he preps for you.
Yes.
And let's just talk about when you arrive. Walk us through that first. I assume, did you go there in the morning or did you go like after work?
No, I said I went after work.
Okay.
So, and this is in November. I believe it was November 19th, I believe, is when I arrived there.
Of 2016.
16. Okay. Yeah.
All right. So you arrive. I'm guessing it was kind of a challenge to get there because it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere. Tell us about that and when you arrived.
So it took me about 3-ish hours to get there because, again, I'm coming from the Huntington Beach area, so I have to go north through Los Angeles and even further north into Canyon Country. And it's funny, too, because one of the things he asked me in my email, he's like, so what kind of car you're driving? And I was kind of like wondering, you know, because I'm kind of like wondering where he's getting with that. He's like, well, you're really going through rough terrain. And that is no joke. I mean, we are talking about, you know, hand-hewed roads there. You know, it's very rugged. You know, you're looking at, like, you know, what's the best way to describe it? You know, it's kind of like desert wasteland, right? Something from your Megaforce movies, you know, or from Mad Max and the
Road Warrior. We're talking dirt roads here?
Stuff. We're talking like dirt roads.
All right.
So, and we're also talking about the end of daylight savings. So we're talking, when it's like 8 o'clock at night, it's dark.
Gotcha.
And when you turn off towards Canyon Country where, you know, his ranch is, there are no lights, no light posts, no nothing. You are in pitch black.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So he actually gave me a bunch of instructions. He's like, okay, I need you to do this. I need you to stop at a certain kind of like a rest area where there's only like one-way traffic. there's like a bunch of trash bins on the side where he has to drive down the hill, down the mountain, to throw his trash away. And he says, I'm going to meet you here at a certain time because I'm taking down my trash, and then you can follow me back up the hill, which I did.
Okay. So you meet him, he takes out the trash, and then...
Here's the funny thing is like... I kind of drove a little bit past the trash cans, and then I saw him coming down the road. I didn't know it was him. And then he stopped. I stopped. He rolled down his window. I rolled down my window, and he goes, I told you to meet me down by the trash cans.
I love it how he calls you out on stuff, because he did the same with me when I was doing the bullwhip training with him in Lakeland, Florida.
Yeah, it's like, oh, great. So here's my first teacher-student interaction, my first time I've actually said anything to him in person, and I didn't get my directions right.
You passed the trash.
I passed the trash, and he called me out on it for sure. But it was strange, too, because it was, in a way, an interesting icebreaker because now I'm not really nervous anymore. I'm more embarrassed that I didn't like follow his instructions. So he turned around. He dropped off his trash, turned around, and he led me up the hill. And his 4x4 was way more suited at the speed that he was going up the hill than mine. So I was just like, I thought my car was just going to rattle into pieces. But it's a little bit more pronounced out there when...
You make it sound like you're driving a Yugo or something.
it's very challenging. It's weird. At night, it's a lot different. The perspective
is a lot different. So it was dark when you arrived?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was dark. So, dark and windy.
So you don't get to actually see the landscape that you're driving through at this time then?
No, not at all. Okay. I mean, I'm literally like on his rear lights, and those things are getting me through basically just this pitch blackness.
All right. Walk us up when you parked and through the, meeting him, and who else did you meet, and talk us through the rest of that night.
Well, it was super informal. You know, when I parked, he said, oh, hey, how you doing, Anthony? And he shakes my hand, and he said, do you have any bags? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, you want me to bring my gear? Because I brought all my training gear. I brought all of my swords, all of my pads, my fencing stuff, all the stuff from HEMA. And he goes, nah, just leave it in the car. You know, we're not going to need that for tonight. But I did bring him a gift because I knew that he and Mary were bourbon fans. So I brought him a Jack Daniel's Select bottle. And
very nice.
Yeah, you know, it's a nice housewarming gift, something to show my thanks. And
you brought him something that he could pronounce.
Yes, you can say Jack Daniels, and we're all good with that. So when I walked into his house, it smelled fantastic because I had to be there at a certain time because Mary cooked dinner that night. And first of all, she is a world-class chef. World-class. Rarely have I eaten better meals. Like in a bed and breakfast or at a hotel. I can't even describe like how good like the meals that she prepares were. They were fantastic.
Can you smell what was cooking at the time?
Oh yeah. Yeah. When I drove up there, I was like, it was dinner time. And the great thing is that it's very unassuming. You walk in there, you walk into their house, and it's very ranch. Like it's very much like a working ranch, but I couldn't see really a lot because it was dark and the lights were low. But we had dinner, and then Anthony decided to, show me my room. I got to meet their dogs, Rocky and Shadow. I love them. They're so cool. One's the bulldog, and one was a dog that they found. I think Rocky's a bulldog. And then one they found there who was kind of feral and followed them home. That was Shadow.
Ah, hence the name.
Yeah, it was Anthony Shadow, just kind of like following him around. So I got my room. And here's the thing. I'm looking at every single detail that I possibly could. And my room is filled with videotapes of sword techniques, books about sword techniques, swords of all kinds, katanas and long swords and rapiers and fencing foils. And they're just all, and that's just my room. And it's just packed to the gills with, I thought it was a little unexpected. I didn't think it was going to be like this full of all this library of stuff. So I thought that was kind of neat. And then Anthony's like, hey, before you turn in, because we're going to start early tomorrow, you want to sit out on the porch and have a cigar and open up that bottle of bourbon?
Ooh.
And I said, yes, please. I think that would be fantastic.
That's awesome.
So we sat out on the porch, and we had to bundle up a little bit. He actually brought me out a poncho because it was windy and it was super cold.
Now, let me ask you something real quick. I know there was some stuff, some conversations you had that you kind of kept to yourself that you didn't want to share, that at Adrian's Peace Fund dinner, because you guys had a personal conversation, I know, with David Abramowitz, and so you kind of kept that to yourself. Is this something you can share, what you guys talked about, or is this kind of, you're going to kind of keep some of that to yourself as well?
Oh, no. You know, the thing with Anthony is that he was really open to what kind of stories would you like to tell? Because he said this in our conversation. He said this
in our
Kingmakers. They said, if you bring up a spirit or two, we'll have a drink, and you can ply me for stories. And I did.
So what did you ask him?
The very first thing I asked him was, tell me a little bit more about your experience as Blade in Masters of the Universe. Because Blade was a character that he created. Blade was not part of the toy line for the Masters of the Universe movie in 1987, of which he starred against Dolph Lundgren. And he was telling me the story about how he was fitted for his costume and how all the chainmail on his costume was made out of quarter-inch slices of PVC piping spray-painted silver.
Hmm.
And then all of that, he said, when all was said and done, that entire chainmail uniform weighed about 50, 60 pounds. And every time a stunt performer was thrown on top of him, it was the stunt performer hitting him along with all of that weight of the chainmail that slammed him onto the floor. He said it was not easy.
Oh, yeah. Huh.
Yeah. So it was just cool. It was him looking back fondly of memories of a movie that obviously meant something to him.
Was there something specific other than that about the chainmail that he said regarding Master of the Universe that you thought was particularly interesting?
We were talking about the animated whip.
Mm, yeah.
In that scene. And he said that I had this whole routine that was practiced and rehearsed, but they couldn't animate over the whip movements that I was going to do because he was already a master bullwhip artist at the time. So they did some animated stuff that they basically had to kind of time in a certain way. So it looked looked like it fit the moment. But he also told me that, you know, at one point in time, they had this whole sword fight that was choreographed out with Frank Langella. And I think that Frank Langella like hurt his back, so he couldn't do it. So something happened where that fight scene with Skeletor at the end was supposed to have been a lot more intricate.
Okay, cool. Okay, so you guys are sipping some brandy, talking about Masters of the Universe. Did you ask him about any other projects that he did, or did you guys kind of wind things down after that?
Nah, we were winding things down after that. I mean, it was, by that time, it was around 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, and you know, after a good meal and brandy and a cigar, and I was just so excited to be there. I really was. I was just like, wow, I'm having a cigar and a bourbon with Anthony DeLongis.
That's awesome.
And this is like even before training. Right. It's like, I'm here. I'm finally here.
So you obviously started to relax at this time. You're getting to know him. Mm-hmm. What did he say right before you turned in? Did he give you an idea of what to expect in the morning?
Yeah, he told me that, you know, we're going to wake up early and we're going to go down and do some of the farm work, you know, or the ranch work, because we had to feed the horses and, you know, Mary's serving breakfast. I think it was like at 9 o'clock, but he had to do like other stuff. So he said, just kind of relax and wake up.
What time did he have you get up the next morning?
Well, I got up at 7, but or 6:30. It's my internal clock. I popped up and the first thing that I did was I started typing out, just kind of like trying to remember exactly like what was happening, like where I was. I took pictures of my room. I kind of like walked around the outside a little bit and took pictures of the house. And I like taking a lot of pictures as keepsakes and mementos.
Because
actually right now, as we're talking about this, I'm kind of scanning through and just remembering like just how amazing my bedroom was, because it was full of these great tchotchkes of like dragons and all this really cool stuff.
Well, let me ask you this before we go on to what your first day activities were. I'm going to put you on the spot here. Do you think you could share a couple of those pictures when this episode's released?
Oh, sure. Okay. I don't think these are any trade secrets. Okay. It's just, you know, it's just...
Myself, I know I've seen some of the stuff you did, but I didn't see all of it. And I'm sure our Blooded Kings fans like to see it. I'm sure Anthony wouldn't mind seeing them as well.
Yeah, they're just pictures of like my bed, my swords, or his swords, or pictures of his books and
now,
stuff like that.
Now, you told me something that Anthony asked you to do I don't know if it was this morning, but he asked you to clean some stuff up.
That's right.
So was that the first morning?
It was the first morning.
Okay, so tell the listeners what you did before breakfast, what stuff you cleaned up.
It was after breakfast. After breakfast. Okay. So we all sat down. We had breakfast. We watched kind of like the morning news, had coffee, and we walked down to the horse stables and in the horse pen, and we cleaned horse apples and cleaned the pen. And that's what you do because, you know, all the horses are supposed to get the pens are supposed to get cleaned out, mucked out, I guess. You mucked out the stables.
Now, just to clarify, you didn't actually clean up horse apples, did you?
Yes, I did.
Okay. The food that they were eating was apples. Did you clean up other stuff too?
Yeah. Well, I think the colloquial term is horse apples, right?
Okay. I had never heard that before. Let's just say what it is. You cleaned up horse poop.
Horse poop. Yeah. Horse manure. They're like giant piles of manure that the horses. They went to the bathroom during the night, and in the morning you have your chores. All you know, right. And I've kind of felt like it was akin to in martial arts training. You have to do as the master says.
Okay, I remember asking you this. This was the kind of test question that he asked you to see how you would respond. He says, "Can you please do this?"
And go ahead.
This was like in my mind. I'm thinking this is the kind of test question he's going to see if Norm is really going to help me out here, or if he's just going to kind of skate by. And
well, I guess yeah. I mean, I guess it's kind of like you can see it a bunch of different ways. I mean, you know, it's like, okay, what kind of student am I dealing with here?
Yeah, exactly.
Because right? he doesn't really know me, and you know, there's a great scene in The Karate Kid Part 1 where Daniel LaRusso goes to Mr. Miyagi's house, and then Mr. Miyagi makes this pact with him. He's like, you know, Miyagi teach, you do, no questions. So the first thing he hands him is a sponge and says, okay, wash all these cars. And I think that, you know, I mean, Anthony literally needed help because there's a lot of stuff we had to do. We had to get the horses cleaned out. We had to get the stables mucked out and all that kind of stuff. But I think that in some way, it was a nice relationship building exercise between a teacher and a student. You know, it's like, you know, are you willing to get your hands dirty? You know, are you willing to work hard?
He was able to size you up because you were willing to do what needed to be done to get his ranch ready so you can be taught by him.
But also what I think a cool thing is was that how many chances in your life do you actually get to be around these live majestic being horses, right? I mean, there are four of them too, and they're really friendly. As soon as you walk up to them, they'll walk up to you and they know you have treats. They are smart horses. I mean, horses are very intuitive. So it was neat. I was, in my opinion, doing the work is paying respect to the environment that I'm in.
Understood.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he respected you even more for it and for helping out. So,
well, I think it starts a very good precedent between a teacher and a student. And I say that very seriously. It's like, he is my teacher. I am his student. And any time that I go back up there, he is still my teacher. You know, or when I see him in October, he is still my teacher. I take that very seriously when I say that. And helping him out at the ranch, I was like, you know what? This is my training. And if this is part of my training, I will do it 100% to the best of my ability. I will muck the heck out of those stables because that's my personality also.
Right.
It's like, if this is a task, I will meet that task to the best of my ability.
So after you cleaned some stuff up there, what mm-hmm. was the first thing that Anthony had you do? What'd you guys do?
We walked from the stables back up. It's interesting because I'll share this picture too. The back of the ranch is kind of like in these three tiers. The top tier is where we had the cigars and the bourbon. The second tier is a weapons training area where you can throw knives or throwing stars or axes or fire arrows at targets. Then the tier right below that, there's a picture that I've shared before of kind of like this really nice, what they call the infinite deck where you can't see the bottom past the deck. You know, it's like it just kind of like drops off into nothingness. That's where we trained sabers that morning. So he pulled out four practice sabers of different weights, and I brought my cold steel cavalry saber, which was the fifth saber that we trained with, but it was a little too heavy. He didn't like me using that for learning certain sword
techniques. I love the look of those cavalry sabers. That's awesome.
Yeah. And these are all blunted weapons. So we started off at about 10:30-ish, and we worked on basic saber form. He wanted to see my balance, my posture, and whether or not I understood his direction. Because we started talking about, you know, all the different positions and all the different guards and how to hold a sword. And the one thing that he stressed over anything else is you have to respect your partner and your partner has to respect you. Because once you lose that level of respect, somebody gets hurt.
How was his I noticed that when I did the bullwhip training, your footing was very important. Did he stress that a lot?
Absolutely. Yeah. Footing in sword fighting is everything. You know, your position, how far away your feet are spread, if you're moving from, you know, left foot forward or right foot forward or passing steps or push steps. So some of my HEMA training was kicking in, and I think that helped me a little bit with my coordination. But he also, he didn't shy away from me learning from the left-handed perspective because I'm left-handed.
Mm, okay. Very cool.
Yeah.
So you do some saber training there on that, that infinity deck. Is that what you called it?
Yeah, it's the infinity deck. Yeah.
First of all, how was the view?
Gorgeous. I will share that picture because it was, imagine the circle, because it's the circle is really a square with a circle inside of it. So imagine that deck being the circle and then doing the exercises within that square platform that was looking out over Canyon Country. It was absolutely breathtaking. Perfect environment.
I saw some of your pictures, and it's just it's almost like a 360-degree beautiful view that you get out of that, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you do the saber training and such. What'd you guys do after that?
So that happened for about 2 hours, and then we broke for lunch. Now, in that saber training, the entire time, I was like, oh, my God, I'm locking swords with Anthony DeLonges. Like, that happened for most of the morning. And then
you're like, you're doing your own duende, man.
Exactly, exactly. But then it started to taper off a little bit because I'm like, you know what? He's putting me through a lot of paces, like really quickly, because I think he knew I could handle the speed of his teaching in a way that we're both safe, because we always stressed safety. And the saber technique went from not just shadow boxing, but actually participating with him as my partner. So we were doing all these moves, like, you know, X and threes, X cuts, X and threes, X and fours, where I'm, you know, crossing, like I'm going to one shoulder, going to another shoulder, going down to one leg and going down to another leg. And then he would do the same, you know, pattern back with me. So it really depends on the way that he kind of, okay, so the best way I can describe it, do you remember when Boromir was teaching the hobbits sword fighting?
Yes, oh yeah.
And he was like, you know, one, two, three, and then Aragorn goes, move your feet, you know, one, two, it's kind of like that. It was that kind of training where everything was very enunciated in terms of block here, block here, block here, block here.
Right.
And then it got to the point where we would speed things up a little bit and maintain safety, and then there were no numbers being called. He would just throw a strike and I'd have to block it and react against
it. And this is still part of the time before you had your lunch?
Yes.
Okay. So you have your lunch. Did Mary make something again for lunch?
Yes. I'll post pictures of my food because her lunches were, all of her meals were amazing.
Wow. Do you remember what did you have for lunch?
Oh, it was this great hand-carved turkey sandwich with like rustic homemade bread and jam and, oh man, a salad. It was amazing, right? So that happened, and then we started doing a little bit more saber training in the afternoon.
Before I forget, this first day of your full training, is this on a Friday?
This is Saturday morning.
This is Saturday morning.
Saturday morning.
So you
Saturday
went up there
afternoon.
Friday after work, and this is Saturday morning. Okay. Okay.
Yes. Yep.
So you have your lunch. Then what happened after that?
Then we continued more saber training, but we kind of eliminated like using all the sabers, and we went to these what are called specific dueling sabers because, one, they weren't heavy, so you can practice with them and you're not wearing out your arms. And two, one of the things that he taught me was that we're doing kind of customized and modified saber work because we're not doing full swings. I mean, he's kind of like taking a lot of like the mythology out of what you think you should be learning and teaching you exactly what you need to know in terms of making a really good sword fight versus a sword fight that would hurt somebody. Because one of the things he showed me was if you attack at somebody with a choreographer's method in mind, it's still an accurate technical attack with a safety catch involved.
Okay, so let me ask you this then. Is he... Okay, the reason why I'm asking you this question is because I remember when he was assisting Braun during Braun's knife combat course. He was assisting Braun, but then he was also, for fun, he would kind of say, then you can do this, and you can really hurt a person if you do that, and blah, blah, blah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Was he teaching you a little bit of both, this is how, if you really want to, if you're fighting to the death, this is what you do, or is he also teaching you more of the theatrical things that you might get out of if you were doing something on film to make it look good on film? You know, the differences between fighting for real and fighting for camera.
He was doing exactly that. The first things that we were doing were fighting on film.
Okay.
Okay, but imagine fighting for film is that you're attacking or planning your attacks in a way where your partner is safe, which means that you're not cutting to his head or you're not cutting to something that would injure him, and you're just stopping short of full extension and full speed.
Gotcha.
But then all of a sudden, and you saw this, you know, when he teaches you, it's like, well, as soon as you want to do something that's very martially true, then you add speed and then you change slightly your direction so that instead of cutting over his head, you're cutting at his head.
Mm, okay. Gotcha.
So what he's training is you're training both at the same time, because all you need to do is turn your wrist slightly and move a little bit faster. And now you've turned a choreographed move into a killing move.
I got to ask you something. Mm-hmm. What I was thinking was, first of all, tell me what you're wearing and then tell me what he's wearing. Because I know that you brought all of this stuff, protection, pads. And then I'm seeing him in pictures with just like cowboy boots and jeans and stuff. Tell me what you're wearing compared to what he's wearing.
I'm not wearing any pads.
Okay.
I'm wearing my Blood of Kings t-shirt, a black undershirt, and my fencing pants, my bloused pants, and my fencing socks.
And then what is he wearing?
He's wearing, I think it was, he wore a lot of like cargo pants, combat kind of camos.
Okay.
And he loves vests.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of his signature look, so yeah.
Yeah. And because of the way that we were training, we never went at true full speed yet. I say yet because we eventually did. We were training in a way where both of us were training the fundamentals. We were learning the body mechanics and the muscle memory, and I was learning what he was teaching in terms of safety and accuracy and coordination and respect.
Ah, that's okay, awesome. Okay.
So that's basically what Saturday was. It was all about, he needs to understand where my level of training is, what he needs to build on, what I am listening to, and what I am executing in terms of keeping him safe as his dueling partner, and the respect that I have for him as somebody who I do not want to injure.
Right.
Or him injure me. So that's where basically the bulk of Saturday went, and we were only training with sabers in the morning. But in the late afternoon, we stopped training with sabers, and we picked up two short plastic swords, and we started practicing Eskrima, which is the Filipino stick fighting style.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so these aren't swords?
They are short, almost wakizashi plastic swords, and Cold Steel sells these. But what he wanted to do is he wanted to get my brain out of thinking in a long sword or saber type of way. And he wanted to just stress a little bit more hand-eye coordination, because Eskrima training, you're doing a lot of cross movements with your arms, tucking the weapons back and forth, striking from underhand positions.
Mm.
And he wanted to build just a little bit more speed and hand-eye coordination towards the end of the day.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you moved to that, what, late afternoon, early?
Late afternoon, early evening.
Okay. And then where did it take you after that?
So once we were done there, then we broke for dinner.
What time was dinner?
was about 6:37.
Okay.
Each one of our training sessions lasted for about 2.5 hours. Then we had a meal, had another training session, had a snack or a meal, had another training session, and then had a major meal. So that's how the course of the day went. And then the reason why we stopped training a little earlier is because Anthony and Mary had a treat for me that evening.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
And what would that
be? And we packed up a couple of bottles of bourbon, and we dressed really warmly because we headed down the hill and we visited with one of their friends who is one of the hosts of the History Channel's Forged in Fire show, and that was Dave Baker.
Wow, this is the show that that Mike talks a lot about. Mike Sellers, our editor.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, so did they mention anything before you arrived? Did you know where you were going?
No, they said like, oh, you don't mind like coming down the hill and hanging out with us and hanging out with Dave Baker, do you? And I'm like, Forged in Fire's Dave Baker? And they're like, yeah, he's like our neighbor. He just like lives down the hill. I'm like, yeah, sure, that sounds great.
Yes, please.
And I'm like, and here I am, like my whole body's like, if I couldn't get like more excited enough. So yeah,
this was after dinner, cool. Obviously.
That was after dinner. Okay. Yeah, this is like around.
So tell
8:00.
Us a little bit about that, Dave Baker.
So here's the funny thing. Anthony or Mary, what they do is that they run the dogs, which is like after dinner. They run the dogs so the dogs are exhausted. And I think Anthony was on an ATV and Mary drove me down in her 4x4. And we went down the hill about 5-7 minutes, I think it was. Maybe it was a little bit longer. And the dogs are chasing after him. This is their this is their after dinner run to get them tired.
That's awesome.
So we finally get to the house. And Dave comes out, and I'm all nervous. I'm like, oh, my God, this is Dave Baker. You know, it's like as if this weekend couldn't get more awesome. And he was super cool. He was so laid back, you know. And, like, you know, for a TV personality, he was just so relaxed. And he goes, yeah, hey, how you doing? You know, why don't you come on into the shop? So I walk into his house, and his house is a little Spartan. You know, his house is a little Spartan, but I think that he's so busy that he's just not, you know, he doesn't really have, you know, an eye for interior decorating. In that sense, I'm not, you know, when I say
so
that,
you don't see a lot of clutter at all. You see a lot of open area. So it's your
yeah, but well, the thing is that his house is covered with swords.
Okay.
Again, right? Because on display, he goes, yeah, he goes, remember this sword? This was in season one. This is like, oh my God. Yeah, that's the Crusader sword, or that's the Chris sword, or that's the Viking axe, or that's the everything that is a challenge at the end, like he built.
Right.
So I'm like looking at these. I'm like, oh my God, these are the actual screen used weapons that were on the show. And then he goes, hey, you want to see something real cool? I'm like, yeah. And he pulls out this rapier that he's working on. I'm like,
ooh.
Oh my God, that's like the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. He goes, yeah, hold it. I'm like, what? No, I can't. And he goes, oh yeah, check this out. Like, it's like nothing,
oh, man.
Right?
And this is straight from the show.
So he was working on this as a commissioned piece because he's a working blacksmith.
Gotcha. Wow, that is so cool.
After
a working
that and,
blacksmith.
Yeah.
That's like a lost art.
He's a professional
art
working blacksmith, wow. That does. Exactly. And he does a lot of custom work. You know, he takes orders and such when he's not on the road. And then I think the pièce de résistance for that evening, well, one of them, was he took me to his actual workshop, and he showed me like his anvil and all of his tools and his heat forge and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, wow, this is the real deal. This is not
wow. This
is not kiddie stuff here. This is like a real, real studio. So I have a picture of that I can share also.
That is really cool, man. Wow. So, yeah, you're get so in one night, in one day, you're getting to meet two experts at their craft. And this guy also works with metal and swords and has a show. You got to be in heaven here, man.
Well, it gets better because when all is said and done, we hang out on his patio and we have cigars and we pull out the bourbon and we start talking about sword movies, right? Because these guys know everything about any movie that has to do with a sword in it, right? So we're talking about, you know, he goes, and he said that he would love to come on the show. It's just that I know how busy he is. He's shooting the new season of Forged in Fire. And when he comes back here, I'll reconnect with him because he had to shoot that in New York. And then he's gonna come back, and then hopefully we'll be able to schedule him on the show for a Kingmaker special. But we were talking about Highlander. We kind of made fun of the Kurgan sword, about how that sword would never be able to stand up to a fight, right?
Did you guys talk about other sword fights other than Highlander, or did you guys kind of keep it to Highlander?
Oh, no. Like, we were talking about some of their favorite movies or some of the older movies. You were talking about, like, the Errol Flynn movies or the Basil Rathbone movies, you know, the Robin Hoods and the original Three Musketeers. Yeah. You know, the, who was it? It was
classic swashbuckling films, from the 30s and 40s.
Right, exactly. Like, the Richard Lester movies with Richard Chamberlain. You know, those movies. And those were their favorite movies. You know, that's something that Anthony turned me on to, is like those classic movies. And they like the movies like The Princess Bride. They think they're entertaining. You know, they like movies like The Count of Monte Cristo, the Disney Three Musketeers movie. They think that one Musketeer movie, the one with like kind of like the Chinese choreography, not so much. They didn't have so many kind things to say about that. But
they speak highly of the one that we liked, the Disney one from the 90s?
They like it, but they recommend they like the original ones, like the Richard Chamberlain version, better.
Right.
I think who else was in there? Rex Reed. What's his name? Oliver Reed.
Mention any recent films that did surprise them that they liked, or was it mostly they talked about the older films?
Mostly the older films. They felt that kind of sword fighting was a little bit more genuine. They do like the Princess Bride stuff, but they said that's it's a little a little flashy. You know, it's like the technique isn't quite there, because that's what they're looking for. They're like, oh no, that's not technique. You know, it's that they wouldn't use that kind of sword fighting before, and so I'm like sitting there. I'm not really participating all that much. I'm just soaking this all up. I'm like, this is really happening. Right now.
So you guys finish up your bourbon that night, and how did that evening wind down then?
Yeah, so, you know, everything was kind of cool. You know, we finished up the cigars and the bourbon, and then all of a sudden, you know, we just pack up, and I talk to Dave a little bit more, and then we drive back up the mountain, and that was pretty much the end of the evening. And I think that one of the things that Mary likes to do is she likes watching, like, the news. And I know that we were watching a lot of Rachel Maddow. They're fans of Rachel Maddow. She's a reporter for CNN. And, we talked a little bit about politics, but, you know, I don't want to get into politics on a show that where a lot of people have their own opinions about politics, because we would be here forever. But, you know, Mary's also a very avid marathon runner, and she was talking about a lot of, like, you know, the marathons that were coming up around that time.
She does a lot of the Disney runs too.
Yeah, and I think that she may have finished up like a big Star Wars marathon that happened like around that time.
Yep.
And we were talking about like how a lot of people, you know, they are offered huge sums of money for the medals that come from those marathons.
Yeah, they're highly collectible. Yeah.
So I got a chance to know her a little bit more, and you know, she's also just as an expert of a sword fighter, horse rider, bullwhip fighter. And you saw that in Lakeland.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you learned from her. So, yeah. So the evening, you know, it wound down, and we were all exhausted. Long day.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, were you tired, not just mentally, but, you know, your body as well after going through all this? Did you feel you got a bit of a workout? Were you ready for bed?
Yeah, it was a long day. I mean, you know, it's you put in a lot of work, and that's what I expected. And I really wanted to leave it all on the table, you know, and make sure that I didn't miss anything or not take an opportunity while I was there.
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so you go to bed. Mm-hmm. How late did you sleep in?
I think I was back up at 6:30 again.
Okay.
That's just who I am, you know, and that what I started doing is I started posting a lot of stuff on social media, catching up in that sense. And then, you know, Anthony kind of, I heard like a lot of rustling around, and this is Sunday now. I started, you know, I got there Friday night, and then I trained all day Saturday, had dinner, had that evening with Dave Baker. And on Sunday morning, we got back to training about 9:00, and I did the exact same thing, went to the horses, mucked out the stables, you know, helped clean up the ranch. In that sense, and then we started again. But this time, this morning, which was awesome, I actually had a little bit of time to walk around the ranch before things started, and I took a lot of pictures. And it's actually a fairly large ranch.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that they had an archery range. I saw they had a weapons firing range. There's a lot more than I realized, because I saw it really early on when the sun was nice and bright, and the it was beautiful. I mean, you know, when you
and this is Sunday morning you're talking about.
Yeah, this is Sunday morning, and it was just very picturesque. The sun was coming up. I had some coffee. You know, it was just, it was one of those kind of like, yeah, this is the reason why I'm here, you know. And then Anthony and I started training, but this time we changed weapons and we started training with rapiers.
Ah.
And then we started doing what's called point training exercises, where we're trying to figure out how to keep ourselves, our weapons on point against a target, and had a lot to do with, in German longsword, what we call frühling, or feeling the weight of the blade and how I can get that weight back, transfer that back from one blade to another and keep that weapon on point.
Gotcha. Wow. That's
and when
cool.
I say on point, the weapon pointing at either your head or at your heart. Okay.
Wow. Was that difficult?
It was difficult because I'm just nervous. I'm like, oh my God, I'm fighting, you know, rapiers with Anthony. So that was earlier on in the morning. But then here, the issue was we were fighting weather, because we could feel the weather coming in, a little bit of rain. So we don't want to fight with weapons, like steel weapons, in the rain. It would ruin the weapons. So Anthony said, hey, how do you feel about learning a little bit of bullwhip?
Now, let me ask you this. Was this something on the docket that you were expecting, or is this all of a sudden just brought up?
Just brought up.
Wow. And what did you say?
Oh, I said, absolutely. Like, you know, it's like, I told him, I was like, you know, Anthony, whatever you want to teach me, I will learn. But we didn't want to have like steel weapons out in the during some of this inclement weather.
Understood.
So that we changed, and he showed me all the different types of bullwhips that he had. I think he brought out about 10 of them.
Yeah.
And he brought out synthetic bullwhips and kangaroo hide bullwhips. And I think there were a couple of different like cowhide bullwhips, and how they all were able to get tapered up to a point. He explained to me the DeLongis method of the bullwhip, the loop and roll.
Oh, yeah.
Which you were exposed to.
Yeah.
And, oh, my God, I can't believe how dead-on accurate he is to centimeters of your face.
Oh, he is so good with that bullwhip. And I tell you, my highlight of the Lakeland 30th Anniversary Convention was taking his course. Mm-hmm. And he took his time with everyone, too. He was wonderful.
But isn't it nice to get that nice rolling loop when you keep your elbow up and you point forward? And you don't put a lot of energy into it, because all the kinetic energy is already in the coil itself, the muscle memory of the whip, right?
Wait, there is such awesome satisfaction, because I remember, let me ask you this, when you first started working the whip, you didn't get that snap right away, but once you got that first snap, it's wonderful satisfaction.
It's like driving a golf ball your first time, like 250, 270 yards, because it doesn't happen every time.
Right,
because you have to pay attention to where your elbow is, where your head is pointing, making sure that you have that straight line, making sure that that loop is rolling outside your shoulder. Tell me that I'm telling you anything different than what he told you. Right?
Yeah, no, you're right. And just about listening to the whip and you know, just, yeah. He, from what I remember, too, I remember he was inspired by, you know, watching you know, Zorro the Gay Blade, and also watching the first Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah.
And he took to the whip like it was a second arm or something, you know.
An extension of his body.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. And he calls it the supersonic blade for a reason.
Uh-huh.
And he has taught and learned his own way of mastering the bullwhip, which, in my opinion, should be the only way people should learn a bullwhip. I'm sure there's other different styles and stuff that he's probably learned from and he can recommend, but he's got his own style. And it is, and I knew this is where, you were telling me what he was going through, and I got to experience this firsthand. And I got to tell you, man, it was so much fun. I got to assume you were having a blast doing this, too.
Well, you know what? He teaches me in a way that I really am receptive to. He's very methodical, very repetitive, very mechanical in some senses, and makes you really understand why you are doing this. It's not just because there's an end result. It's because you have to understand point A to point Z and everything in between and why it's happening. So the reason why you're cracking that and breaking the sound barrier at the end with the crackers is because you're doing all of this in the right way. And I can't wait. I mean, I want to do that again. But that was just for a short portion of time, like I said, as the weather was kind of getting a little misty. But once that was before lunch.
Okay. I was going to ask you what that was, yeah.
Yeah, so the rapier point technique and the bullwhip was before lunch. So that was between kind of like 10:30 and 1. And then we had lunch, and then after that, this is where everything came to the most perfect conclusion before I had to leave. And he said, let's put on pads and let's go full speed.
Wow. And what, rapiers?
Right. Rapiers.
Ooh.
So
he asked you to get in the circle.
That's right. So I put on my mask and I put on my jacket. And then all of a sudden I turn around and he's in his mask and his jacket. And all of a sudden he looked so formidable. Like, this isn't the guy that I've been training with for like the last day and a half. Like, now this, it's like, oh yeah, it's on now. So we started first with sabers, actually. And we were just, he was kind of like going, okay, let's do X and 4 and X and 3 at a faster tempo. And yeah, you know, I was getting the movements and it was really fun. And, you know, I was getting my, you know, steps and moving back and forth, and that was great. And then he starts going, okay, now we're going to start going for each, you know, we're going to start trying to tag each other. And this is where I kept getting banged a little bit because I had the biggest smile on my face. I'm like, I don't care what's happening right now. I'm dueling Anthony DeLongis. My circle has been completed by this time. You know, from all the way back when I saw him in Master of the Universe. Consone.
You're fighting with Consone.
Exactly. I'm fighting with Consone. And I know that's, he's a made up character, but it's true. It's in my heart that I'm fighting Ottavio Consone, the reason why I'm here. So, and there were a couple times where I learned some techniques that I was able to use back on him where I was actually getting a couple of clean shots on him. And he goes, you know, oh, that was really good. You paid attention. So we got to rapiers, and I have to tell you about this one particular exchange because we were at arm's length. We were both pointing our rapiers at each other, and then we got into our position, and then he did a thrust on me. And I blocked it, and I did what's called a cavazione, which means that I'm going to encircle his blade, and then it's like a feint. And then I was able to tag him, but that's the move that he taught me. You know, it's a disengaged cavazzione into a thrust. I thought my heart was going to explode when I landed that thrust on him. And I know that it's probably, he's like, you know, I'm building confidence in my student, but being able to get in position, to hold the sword right, to execute the maneuver, to understand my measure and distance and be able to perform these moves and understand the terminology, it all came to like one perfect singular moment, and you could have shot me dead there on the spot and I would have been happy. I swear to God.
That's awesome. You know?
and that.
When you got him though, mm-hmm. Did he respond? What did he say? What did he say?
Yeah. He goes, that's exactly what you needed to do. Nice. You needed to disengage my blade. You needed to come around. You needed cavazzionis so I would actually go for your blade on the outside, and you came back in for an inside thrust. That's exactly what you would use that move for. That's exactly what we were practicing, and you understood that. And that's what he taught me. And I love learning this. I love it to death. And it's such an emotional high because the experience of executing something educational and physical and athletic all at the same time, there's no greater feeling in the world than understanding what your teacher has taught you and giving it back in that execution. It's mind-blowing.
I have to ask you, I assume he tagged you a few times. Did you get that hurt? Because I know you didn't get hurt, but mm-hmm. Did you get kind of bruised up a little bit, or what was that like?
No, because we were using weapons that weren't of a significant mass. So when we were using sabers, we were using aluminum sabers, and they're very light. So you don't really get hit with a lot of mass. I mean, we're talking about probably getting hit with something that's, I don't know, maybe a pound.
Okay.
You know, so, but you learn. You know, there's one point in time where he kept hitting me in the same place, and he, these are the words right out of his mouth. He goes, are you going to do something about that?
Right? I could totally hear the tone of his voice and the way that he would deliver that.
Hilarious. It was hilarious. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, okay. No, okay. Then I come back, you know, and like, you know, in a defense, I'm like, oh, okay. I didn't know we started. And he just kept, it was like right at my head. He's like, you're going to do something about this soon? And I'm like, yeah.
Hey, I told you not to drive past the trash. You're going to do something about that?
Exactly. So I was like, oh, wow. I just got put in my place.
That's awesome. Right? All right, man. So you're doing this rapier work. What happens after that?
So we did the saber work. And this is, again, this is all in pads. And we worked a pretty good froth. And then it was time for dinner. So we cleaned ourselves up. I packed up my room.
You said this was dinner. Is this kind of an early dinner on Sunday?
Yeah, they wanted to get me on the road before it was too dark. So it was about 5 o'clock.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was just, you know, Mary like made this fantastic last dinner. And there's a picture of she and I, you know, we had a couple of drinks during dinner. And it was just, Anthony asked me to do one thing and I did. He goes, I want you to take notes when you get home of what you've learned so that you can remember all the techniques that you've learned and the different structure that we engaged in. So next time you come up, we can start from here. Now, these are your notes. You know, like how golfers take notes when they're on the course,
right?
Or, you know, how coaches take notes about their players and they need to improve on that. So I did. And I actually have my notes. I'm looking at them right now. And the entire time, I forgot one key thing.
Say it, man. We're okay. Here.
So after we were done training, I asked him point blank, I'm like, do you have the circle? Do you actually have the physical circle from Duende? And he says, I don't have that circle, but I do have a near copy of that same circle that we used on Queen of Swords.
Ah.
Because he was the maestro to that character, the female character in Queen of Swords. And so I was standing there in front of it. I'm like, it's still the circle. Right. And that was hung up in his workshop. So I just wanted to make sure that.
Did you get a picture of it?
Oh, totally. Yeah, totally. So I told people, you know, like you said, it's like if you don't take the advantage of being in the circle or standing in front of that actual circle prop, you probably miss something there when you're at the ranch if you're a Highlander fan. So make sure if you go to the ranch, ask Anthony to show you that. So he showed me that. And then as Mary was making dinner, he took me around pretty much all the nooks and crannies of the house. And believe me when I tell you this, that almost every room is jam-packed with swords.
Wow.
And I'm looking at him like, wow, what a collection. Sabers, rapiers, long swords, fencing foils.
Wait, I got to ask you, did he show you any that were like the crown jewel of his collection or the ones that he coveted the most or had a special story behind it? Was there something that he pointed out that really meant something important to him?
You know, I didn't ask him. There were so many that I'm not sure if there was one. I'm sure there is. I'm sure there's something that has complete, you know, personal and some type of personal level, something very significant, like maybe something that was given to him by an instructor,
right?
Or maybe something that, you know, he and Braun trained with, or something that was given to him by Adrian. I don't know. I didn't ask, but because there were just so many, it's like, I was bowled over by the sheer volume of weapons that were in there. Yeah. So,
wow.
But yeah, so that was pretty much it. So we had dinner and then, you know, we kind of like said our goodbyes and, you know, he said, what did you think of the training? And I told him that this is like one of the best weekends of my life. I said, and I didn't pull any punches when I said, Anthony, one of the reasons why I'm here is because I'm a fan of yours. And the reason why I'm a fan of yours is because of all these different works that inspired me to become my own sword fighter. I fell in love with the both of them. I think they're such a great couple, Anthony and Mary. And she's so lovely and charming. And I believe me when I tell you this, she is one of the best cooks I have ever had the pleasure of being cooked for. I mean, her cuisine is amazing.
That's awesome. Wow.
Yeah. And it was a great bonding experience. And I was really sad to go, but around 7 o'clock, he drove me down the hill right to the trash cans and I made it home and, I can't wait to get back there.
Did he ever explain the name of his ranch, Rancho Indalo?
Yes. Rancho Indalo, it has something to do with, Oh, gosh. Because if you drive up, it says Rancho Indalo. And if you drive away, it says Rancho. And I think it has something to do with there's a legend that's built into the name about being a place of spiritual harmony.
Wow. Okay.
And yeah, there's something very significant to the name. I just don't remember it right now.
Well, he is obviously he's going to be at the Highlander 25th, the gathering, celebrating the 25 years of the Highlander TV series.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be doing some workshops, of course. I'm assuming he'll probably might be entertaining some Highlander fans that might come up either before or after the convention. Be kind of curious to find out more about that. And that's something that I'm sure that you would recommend if anyone is in the area and wants to experience what you had have had a chance to do, to please look him up. And if this was the case, Norm, if mm-hmm. someone's listening to this podcast and wants to take part in this, how would you recommend that they find out more and contact him directly?
Well, you can go to the website, delonges.com, and then email him or private message him on Facebook and let him know that you are coming out for the convention and either plan something either before or plan something after, because you're literally in right there. You're right in proximity of getting to Rancho Indalo. You're downtown Los Angeles near the airport and you're within an hour, I think, of the ranch itself. So if you want to continue in that experience, I highly recommend it, especially if you're coming from a long ways away. Take the advantage of it. Make the most of your trip and experience the ranch, because, sure, you can learn the bullwhip technique outside of a hotel or inside a ballroom, but the ranch itself is its own experience, and that's something that, again, if you're traveling from overseas or you're traveling from a long distance, I highly recommend spending a day or two there, either before or after the convention when he's available. You won't regret it. I can guarantee it.
Wow. That's awesome, Norm. And I remember asking you in detail about this event. And I remember we were going to talk about this eventually. We talked about turning it into an episode. But other stuff came up. And you had just shared your experience at the Sword Experience. And we had other shows coming up. And we were also, I was also looking forward and getting ready to see him and Adrian for his Sword Experience for the Lakeland 30th anniversary convention. And I knew we were going to come back around to this one of these days, because I just, with the celebration that we've been doing of celebrating 1 year of Blood of Kings and all that's happened, this is one of those stories I did not want to go any further without you talking about it. And I appreciate you sharing your thoughts on this and taking a walk down memory lane and having this very special evening at Joe's here on Blood of Kings. Really appreciate you sharing that, man.
Oh, my pleasure. And I'm glad that we had a chance to do this. Believe me, listeners out there, believe me 100% when I say this. Anthony and Mary are the loveliest people, and they know their craft inside and out, because this is how they make their livelihood. They are trained professionals who want to have you there so that they can train you in the arts that you are interested in learning. They are masters at what they do. And one of the things that I left with, this still kind of like gets me a little emotional thinking about it. I told Anthony before I left, I go, first of all, would you mind if I gave you a hug goodbye? And he said, no, I don't have a problem with that. And Mary too. But I said this, And I think that it actually gave him a little bit of pause too. I told him, Anthony, I consider you my master now. I consider me being your student for however you want to accept that, but you are my master now.
How do you take that? What did he say?
He says that he said that, thank you, and I take what you said very seriously. I take being a teacher to my students very seriously. It is an honor and a responsibility that he takes very seriously.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Wow. What a great way to respond to that.
Yeah.
As we wrap up this walk down memory lane here, Norm, I'm going to put you on the spot because I love to do that.
Okay.
I want you, on Kevin's Immortal Quickening Scale, to tell me where you rank this special experience that you had at Rancho Indelo with Anthony and his wonderful wife, Mary.
So not my retelling, but the actual experience that I had.
The experience, right? You had, yes. You know, one being a katana, you know, Richie's jacket, and 10 being a mythos, and 11 being a four horseman. Duncan's around 8, Darius is at 9, you know. Where do you rank this?
I'm not even going to, like, sugarcoat this. I'm going to take this all the way to an 11.5. And the reason I say 0.5, it is the four horsemen plus Cassandra.
Well said, and I expected no less from you. That's great, man.
I'm not going to BS. I mean, you know, I know that we do this for fun, but I'm not going to BS the listeners. I can't even begin to get close to describing how I feel about this in all true honesty. It's something that you have to experience for yourself. If you're a Highlander fan, you'll get over the sticker shock and the star shock of being with him very quickly, because he gets you into training so fast, because he's there to teach you and you are there to learn, hopefully. So you are going to get exactly what you want to get out of that experience. And for me, no matter how many times I do that, I don't think it will ever come close to the very first time.
Yeah.
It feels like the first time. Right? We're going to get singing in this eventually.
Another hit off Norman's classic Best Of CD.
That's right.
Well, Norman, thank you very much. And we hope our Blood of Kings fans and listeners have enjoyed this special evening at Joe's. Norm's experience, Rancho Indelo, with Consone himself, Anthony DeLongis, and being fed very well by his lovely wife, Mary. Mm-hmm. Any last words you'd like to say, final thoughts?
No, I can't wait to get back there. I'm looking forward to seeing both of them at the 25th anniversary convention in Los Angeles in October this year, hopefully sooner. But again, it's tough to get there sometimes, because, you know, you want to make a long experience of it, but I can't wait. It's such a great time, and I can't wait to bring Carol up there, because she wants to learn horseback riding, and Mary's very, very good at being an instructional first-time teacher, you know, for those who are going to try it out. So, so many feels. I don't want to stop talking about it, but I have to.
I understand, man. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing them at the gathering and seeing you as well.
Yeah.
And representing Blood of Kings, and seeing all of the other Highlander fans out there and listeners of Blood of Kings. So I'm looking forward to that. Can't wait. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Norm, thank you again. And I'm Kevin. And on behalf of my co-host, Norman, thanks everyone for listening. And join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Norm, that sensation you are feeling is the quickening at Rancho Indelo. We are one. We are brothers. Goodbye, everyone.